Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, and you are tuning in to Therapy in a Nutshell here on KCNR Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. Today we're going to be talking about COVID school closures and the emotional effects that that has on children. I have a special guest here in the studio with me. Her name is Amanda Nardo, and Amanda is a realtor. She is Vista Real Estate here in Redding, California, and she does an excellent job. I highly recommend her. But Mandy also is a mom, and she has delved deeply into the research and the statistics and the facts about school closures within Shasta County here. And we are not trying to say that this is what happens for every school district or every single person around the country, but we are seeing so much happen with our children in the area, and I am hearing it from a lot of my listeners from around the country, that I felt it was really important to do a show about the emotional effects of all of this COVID and school closures and all of this stuff on children. So we want to lay out some of the effects. By the end of the show, I want to give you some coping skills to help your kids when they're struggling. And I want to open this up for discussion. If you're out there listening and you have some brief thoughts on how this is affecting your family or your children, then I'd like you to call into the studio. It's area code 530-605-4567. My producer, Jared, will answer the phone, and you can either make a comment, he'll repeat it to me, or you can be on the air, and you can be anonymous if you want to, or you can use your name if you do want to be on the air. So, Mandy, thank you so much for coming on, because you have I read your research. You shared it all with me, and I was extremely impressed about a couple of things. The extensiveness of your research, and also how you did it in a very unbiased manner. You were looking at everything you can find, whether it agreed with your opinion or disagreed with your opinion, and you were trying to find out, what's this doing to my children? You have two children.
Yes.
And what's it doing in the school district your kids go to? So just thank you for being willing to share your perspective, because I think it is a very well thought out one and very unbiased. And I was very impressed with that.
Well, thank you. And thank you for doing this and adding your opinion as a therapist with all of your years of experience too.
Oh, you're welcome. One of the reasons I want to do this show, and I want to start off with some of the emotional components of what happens with children, is I am getting a ton of calls from families I've seen over the years, from people very worried about their children. And I have seen more suicidal children in the last 3 or 4 months than I have seen in 34 years. I have parents calling me up saying, my 10-year-old is telling me he wants to kill himself. We've had teenagers that have had to be hospitalized. And it's just really sad. And these kids are groping for coping skills. And they have lost a big, huge outlet. So many of these kids, their release from their tension, their boredom, their problems at home have been sports, extracurricular activities, hanging out at recess with their best friends, sitting and talking with their girlfriends at lunch. Those outlets have all been shut down. And kids have turned more increasingly to social media, staring at their phones, looking at TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat, and those can be extremely negative effects on children. I've heard more bullying online from kids who are way into social media again now than they were when they were busy. So we're seeing a huge emotional impact on kids. Mandy, what are you seeing for your two girls at home?
Well, they're doing okay right now because they are actually in in-person school full time, and they love being in school. I think they even have a greater appreciation for it than maybe they used to. We did the distance learning when the shelter in place happened, and it was a massive struggle for our family. Our kids just didn't really take to it, and I felt, and my husband felt, that they were just not getting really that much out of it. And we would try to do like Zoom with their friends and with their classmates and stuff, but I just found that they really didn't hold their interest. And that might be partly too because they're younger, they're elementary aged. So the older kids may get a little bit more out of, you know, talking to their friends on the phone or on the computer, but I think little kids especially don't. And I became really worried at that point what full-time distance learning would look like for our family and for my kids.
I think it's really hard. Both you and your husband work. You're a very busy realtor. Your husband has a full-time job. And you've got to juggle two little kids that are too little to be left home alone. It's not like they're high schoolers and you can go off to work for a few hours. It doesn't work that way with little kids. So the children are struggling. The parents are struggling to try and help the kids. And the other thing I see is the impact on the families. There's a lot of family fighting. There's a lot of marital discord. There's a lot of kids pushing parents' buttons. I've had a whole lot of parents say to me they feel stupid. I remember one mom said to me, I'm trying to do fifth grade math. I can't do fifth grade math. I feel like an idiot. And it's hard because they're not equipped to do this. They're not teachers.
Yeah. And that's hard even for, you know, like my husband and I both have educations. Mm-hmm. And I really struggled with trying to distance learn my daughter that was in first grade at the time, because not only is the math taught differently, and math's not my strong suit anyway, but also, like, she would do her writing assignments, and I had struggled with, when do I know when to push her, and when am I asking too much of what she's capable of? What's reasonable? Where's the line? And that's something that parents don't really understand the way that teachers do. And the other thing is some students have learning disabilities. Like I have a neighbor that her daughter's dyslexic, and she's like, we struggled so hard trying to teach her because we're not skilled, or trained to work with, you know, this issue.
Right. Kids with special needs, it's extremely hard. My granddaughter, who's been on this show before, is 14, and she's on the autistic spectrum, and she just simply cannot do the constant schedule changes. She's doing 2 days in school and 2 days on the computer, and she normally has incredibly great grades, like straight A's almost, and she's just sliding downhill. And I really want to give credit to her high school. She's brand new freshman in high school. They're kicking in to help her with her IEP and try to help her get caught up, because she just can't do all the changes. So not every kid can. And the ones with special needs definitely are getting left behind. So, you know, we're trading one problem for another here. And we've got the COVID issue, and people are trying to do the best they can with social distancing and masks and all that. And in the second part of the show, we're going to get into more what your research is, because I really want you to share that with people. It's been phenomenal that you've done that. But we need to look at the emotional issues for the kids in this first part. The kids are going to end up being a year or two behind in school, or at least having detriments, like in their reading levels, their mathematics levels, because their parents are having trouble helping them with those. The kids with economic hardships, if you're from a higher socioeconomic school district and most of your parents have laptops and iPads and access to technology and the know-how to help, your kids are going to do better than the socioeconomic schools, and we have a lot of them here in Shasta County, that don't have all that.
Sure. They have the resources to hire tutors or outside help as well.
Right. Yeah, these families that have been forming pods for their kids to help them learn, that's been helping, but not everybody has that access. So there's technology inequities, and there's economic hardship. And then there's stress. There's parents that do better with their kids when they get a break from them 5 days a week, most of the day. When they are in each other's face all the time, the fighting is huge. And I, as a psychologist, I hear that more in my office. I have people sitting in their chair going, I'm a bad mother. Mm-hmm. We're fighting all the time now. And they'll say things like, I can't stand doing this. What's mm-hmm. wrong with me? And then they're trying to deal with the economic hardships of home, working at home or not working at all. And it's been crazy. But let's look at the damage to kids from different age groups. When we come back from the break, we're going to do that, because we tend to see different things happening for the different age groups of kids. And I also, in the second part, want you to share your research. So we're going to go to break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
I expected it to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right?
So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
At Golden Valley Bank, our mission is to create a truly unique local banking experience. We understand how important it is to be known and heard by your bank. That's why we take the time to connect with you and the community you live in. When you bank with us, we put your money back into our community by supporting local nonprofits who provide services for those that need it most. Golden Valley Bank, a bank built for business, a bank built for community, a bank built for you. Learn more at goldenvalley.bank. Member FDIC.
Dr. Farrell in Palisadro is now making dental work more affordable by offering a Dental Discount Savings Plan annual membership. The Dental Discount Savings Plan is simple, straightforward, and includes 20% off all treatment, such as emergency limited exams, restorative work, fillings, crowns, partials, bridges, dentures, and periodontal treatment, a comprehensive exam, oral cancer screening, a TMJ exam, a periodic exam, and two sets of x-rays, along with cleaning and two fluoride treatments. The program is a discount plan, not a dental insurance plan, and is only available at the office of Dr. Farrell. The Dental Discount Savings Plan annual membership provides immediate eligibility. No yearly maximum, no deductibles, no claims to submit, no limitations for pre-existing treatment, and no waiting periods. Children on the plan must be 15 years or younger. Some restrictions apply. Membership prices may vary. Contact Dr. Farrell, located at 9461 Deschutes Road, Suite 2 in Palisadro. Call 547-5757 to make an appointment today. That's 547-5757.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patty, Dr. Patricia Bay. You're listening to the beautiful Native American flute music of Randy McGinnis. Native American flutist, plays worldwide, has won extensive awards, and he's amazing. He has six CDs. They're all different. They're all beautiful. You can go to randymcginnis.com to listen to his music. And thank you, Randy, for letting us use your beautiful stuff on our show. We appreciate it. Okay, we're talking about COVID school closures and the emotional effects that it has on children. As a psychologist, I'm seeing a whole lot of suicide ideology, a lot of depression, loss, grief and loss in our children. And that's the thing by the end. I want to give you some coping skills for grief and loss in kids. All right, so one of the things I'm seeing is the young kids, like age 2 to 6, you have to remember that this is an age where children are learning to recognize facial expressions and pair that with social awareness. So when they look at somebody frowning or looking mean at them, they're learning to know that that means back away or something is wrong. When we are masking the entire population, including them, including their parents, out in public, we are creating a deficit in this learning ability from 2 to 6-year-olds. That is not necessarily something that they're going to learn later. This is a real window of opportunity for kids to be learning this, and we don't want them to miss out on that. So in K-3, they're learning a lot of social interaction, how to sit still, how to take turns, how to speak in front of other kids without being shy. And it's a real behavioral thing as well going on in that age group. So then we get up in the higher middle school ages, and we're helping children learn how to socially interact with each other. If you think about it, these are the years where you're not getting invited to birthday parties, and you're not my best friend, and I don't like you anymore. And these are all social structures that children are learning and how to cope. So then they get a little older. They're dealing in early junior high, they're dealing with budding sexuality, hormones, girls liking, you know, everybody liking each other and not liking each other in terms of you're my boyfriend, and it just drives you nuts when you hear sixth graders saying, well, she's going out with him. So they're pairing up a little bit. And then that even gets more in high school. So we have different behavioral things that are happening in these different age groups, and they're being stunted and changed, and the availability of kids growing up as we're used to is altering significantly. So, Mandy, you have a kindergartner and a second grader. Mm-hmm. What emotional issues are you seeing in them at home? Any changes or anything that's going on since you've been going through all this COVID stuff with them and all the mask stuff with them?
Well, right now they're actually doing really well, and that's, I think, because they are in school full-time, which is good. But I did notice that when we were distance learning, there was an event where I had taken my little one, who's the kindergartner, to the airport to pick up a nurse that was coming back from working on the ship that was in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was the first time that my daughters had been separated from each other. And the little one kind of broke down crying at one point and was like, "I miss Kate." And I just thought, this is strange. They normally wouldn't do that. They used mm-hmm. to be very comfortable being separated from each other. And that kind of was a yellow flag in my head that this wasn't maybe healthy for them.
The dependency on each other. You're right. I have one client whose second grader has been acting out a lot, and she's started lying, and she's really changing her behavior in a negative way. But she's around the tension of the household all the time, and she's not getting out, and she's not playing like she usually does. She's bored as all get out.
Yeah.
And so she's acting out.
I've talked to a lot of my friends, I've talked to lots of parents actually that either have kids in school or distance learning, and several of my friends and acquaintances have mentioned that when their children are doing distance learning that their behavior changes and they do act out more at home. One of my friends actually observed that in her kids and chose to put them back in school when she had originally wanted to keep them out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have another parent whose school was closed and she had no option. And she went to her school every single day and told them about all the reasons why distance learning didn't work for their family that day.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things, was that her children were just acting out in ways that they never had before.
It changes the whole family dynamics and the whole parental-child relationship dynamic. So share with us a little bit of your research. You've had some pretty astounding facts that you've come up with. And I want to stress again that Mandy did this in a very non-biased nature. She was not just trying to prove her point, which I love. That's one of the reasons I asked her on here. So share with us some of the stuff you learned.
Well, I started digging into the research on schools and COVID and kids because at my kid's school, the topic of whether to go to full-time distance learning until the end of winter break came back up on the table. There were a lot of parents that were saying, this is really hard. We're having a lot of staff quarantining. We're having a lot of students quarantining. And the yo-yoing is getting really difficult logistically. So I started, to me, I just looked at it as a question in my head of, you know, our community spread has increased, right? Should we close schools to prevent the spread of COVID-19? So that was my question, and I went looking for the answer for it. And the research that I found, honestly, was overwhelmingly in support of the fact that schools are not driving transmission. That's true here in the United States. It's true around the world. And it's confirmed by study after study after study, and also from very credible sources. It's the statement that the WHO has said, the CDC has said, the European Center of Prevention for Disease. There was a large study that was done by Brown University that was here in the United States. It was over 47 states with 200,000 students, 63,000 staff that confirmed that schools are not transmitting COVID. And, in fact, consistently, and I actually called Shasta County Public Health, and I confirmed this, that this is mirrored in our county as well. Consistently, the school infection rate is significantly lower than the surrounding community. So right now, Shasta County Public Health, as of 2 days ago, our community infection rate was almost 2%. It was like 1.99. And the school infection rate was 0.80. And they're seeing the same thing in New York, and in lots of other areas. So I started digging into it for that reason, because I started thinking, if schools aren't driving transmission, and in fact might be even helping reduce transmission because they have all these mitigating procedures in place and these stable cohorts, then why would we close them to prevent the spread?
And yeah, at the sake of our children.
Yes. I mean,
we are sacrificing our kids. And some of it we see as politically based. There's a lot of COVID fear that is pushed. And then there are the teachers' unions, and I do not feel qualified to speak about the politics about that. But when we hear teachers' unions that want to add defunding the police and add curriculum that is one political party over another, all of a sudden it doesn't seem like it's about disease transmission anymore. It seems like it's about manipulation and bargaining and pushing personal agendas.
Right.
And that is at the sacrifice of the children. And as I'm a psychologist, you're a mom and you're doing this research, and I'm seeing kids actually get suicidal, go into depression, change who they are as individuals. It's harming families. It's destroying marriages. I'm seeing a huge emotional cost on families and marriages and children. And that's just in Shasta County. That's in one psychologist's private practice. And talking to some of my other therapeutic friends, people who deal in this profession, that's just in one county. Across the United States, we are seeing devastation to children. And I want to know how long we're going to let this happen to our kids. You shared with me something about the reading levels and the statistics that you're seeing in just your kids' school district alone. Can you share that? Because I think that's profound.
Yeah, so I observed the board meeting for my children's school a couple days ago, and one of the things that came up was the reading intervention program, and they showed the statistics. So they test the K through 3 students to see which students are below or very below grade level reading. And they compared the number of students in each of those grades to the number of students that they had last year. And it's almost doubled in every grade, the number of students that are below or very below in reading. And I think we all know kind of intrinsically that reading is key to helping children succeed in school long down the road. And even more frustratingly, the intervention program now is being affected by COVID and all of the restrictions that we now are facing at the school level. It's not as easy to get them the intervention help. It's not being able to be done in the same way that it was before, because it might require mixing cohorts and the resources are more limited. I just look at these problems and I think these are going to grow and compound. And if we don't do something to proactively and creatively find solutions now, it worries me that it's going to be irreparable for this cohort of children right now.
Yes, it's going to be like a COVID cohort of kids who are behind. How do we catch them up? And we're missing some critical learning periods for them, which is very important.
I should clarify that data was for the students that are in person full time right now. That only included a couple of kids that were doing distance learning. I'd love to see in comparison if the distance learning kids are about the same rate or whether it's different. I would honestly suspect that there are going to be more numbers of low and very below.
How could it not be? That this is overwhelming for families. When you get a busy mom with 3 or 4 kids of different grade levels who's trying to work from home and that trying to keep up on this Zoom learning stuff and the kids' homework and the busy work that is assigned to them. The busy work is, I hear, a big complaint about dumb busy work that just takes a huge amount of time. These moms are going crazy trying to do this. How can they sit and make sure that their first grader or their fifth grader is doing all their reading? Because it's like, you know, you've got 4 kids, you're 4 teachers, and you're working from home and you're trying to keep up on it. It's crazy. Well, and it's stressing people out.
And the thing that we need to remember as a society, too, is that every family has a different scenario. You know, some people may only have 1 student, and that may be easier to just help 1 student distant learn with 1 grade. When
Sure.
you start adding families that have multiple students in multiple grades, it gets much, much harder. I have a friend that has toddler twins plus 3 other older children and has been trying to homeschool them through this.
Is she pulling her hair out?
Yes. She's struggling majorly. She said she is having constant breakdowns, and I'm sure I would be, too.
Yeah, the kids are probably having meltdowns, and she's probably in the bathroom with the door locked going, leave Mommy alone for a minute. I don't blame her. All right, we've got to go to break. And when we come back, we're going to keep talking about the research and the emotional impact, and by the end of the show, I want to give you some coping mechanisms. Okay, we'll be back in a minute.
The Lung Affair is a nonprofit organization that raises public awareness about lung cancer as well as implementing smoking cessation programs within the community. The Lung Affair was started and is supported by Pace Cancer Center in 2008. Money generated through this program is then allocated for smoking cessation and lung cancer awareness programs in Shasta County, including education programs for elementary, middle, and high schools. We also create public service advertisements about the dangers of smoking and have them placed at numerous area bus stops with wide visibility, as well as on the sides of robo buses. Due to the current COVID-19 pandemic, our event this year will be held as an online raffle posted on the Pace Cancer Center Facebook page. There will be 3 gift baskets available for raffle, and tickets will be available at the Pace Cancer Center. In addition, you can also donate to this fundraising event. Tickets are now available and will be available till 4 p.m. on Wednesday, November 24th, and the raffle will be drawn on Monday, November 30th. Help us help our community. Pace Cancer Center and the Lung Affair.
These are unprecedented times. Challenging how the YMCA works to strengthen community as we have for nearly 170 years. But we've always found ways to help people and communities in times of crisis. Right now, Ys across the country are providing emergency childcare, shelter, food programs, and outreach to seniors. But we can't do it alone. Whether you're connected to the Y or have a fond Y memory, we need you to stay with us. Reach out to your local Y today and stay with us. For a better us.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patty, and I am here with Amanda Nardo, mom, real estate agent, who's done a lot of research on this subject. We're talking about COVID and schools and school closures and the emotional impact on children and on families. So, you know, we've talked about kids having meltdowns, parents having meltdowns. Some parents are handling it better. You know, you picture of a family of two parents who are keeping their income. Mom's able to work at home and keep her job, and she has one kid who's very bright and cooperative. He or she doesn't have ADHD or dyslexia, or just isn't on the autistic spectrum, just like an average little kid who's cooperative, who sits down and does their homework, and mom directs, and it's actually been kind of a fun time for them to be interacting.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the norm. It is not what I'm hearing in my practice. It's not what people are walking around saying. Your friend with the toddler twins and 3 or 4 other kids. And
yeah, 3 other grades to teach at the same time.
Yeah, it's absolutely overwhelming. And then we add, I've got one family that the mom has autoimmune disorder that makes her extremely tired. And she used to be able to get the kids to school, do a couple things around the house, lay down and rest, get up and do a couple more things, lay down and rest to manage her autoimmune disorder, and then go get the kids from school at 3 o'clock and then kind of boost up a little bit to get some dinner and stuff. She is exhausted, and her autoimmune disorder is getting way worse. So the stress, the emotional impact, the educational deficits that are happening, the problem to marriages and family fighting and relationships between parents and children are all just kind of a tip of the iceberg. And you have to remember, these are only the people speaking up asking for help. When I'm seeing a whole lot of kids, like teenagers and 10-year-olds and little kids saying, I hate my life and I don't want to do this anymore, how about all the kids that don't get help or that can't afford help? It's one of the reasons I do my podcast. I turn this radio show into a podcast. There's one show I did on depression in children that is a great resource for people to really listen to. But it's some free therapy for people that can't get into help and need some coping skills. So you had some more research that I wanted you to talk about younger children and transmission and all that. And can you speak to that research that you did?
Yeah, well, one of the things that I found that was again, just not disputed by all of the top authorities. I know for a fact I read it on the WHO website about schools and transmission. I'm pretty sure it was corroborated in several other places, is that children under 10, not only do they not get COVID as often, even when they're exposed to it, they also very rarely transmit it. They're almost like a viral dead end. They're not quite. They can transmit it, but it's very, very rare, especially compared to, you know, children that are 11 and older. And I actually also read something else that was interesting. This was on the New York Times website. They referenced a study, I think it was from Nature's website, that said that, you know, we've been really stumped at why are children spared? You know, they don't get it as much. If they do, it's very mild and they're not really transmitting it. What's going on with that? And they said that basically the theory is that from what they found in the study, the coronaviruses that children are exposed to with other cold and flu viruses are actually in the same family as the novel coronavirus. And that exposure that they've had to those other colds and sicknesses is giving their immune system a boost. They basically are already prepared to have antibodies ready to fight off the novel coronavirus. So that helps them not get it. Mm-hmm. And it also helps them to fight it off quickly. And that's why we're potentially seeing so many more mild symptoms with them.
That makes absolute sense. Think every parent knows that when their kid starts preschool, they're going to get a whole bunch of colds, mm-hmm. right? By the time they're in kindergarten, they're going to get colds and the flu. And because all of a sudden they're exposed to things that they weren't when they were mostly at home. And so we all know that. And then the parents all get the cold that the kid comes home with.
Well, yeah. And that was another thing, is that that led the researchers to question, are the families that live with these children who are also exposed going to benefit from the same protection? And they did one supporting study that indicated that that is probably going to be the case. And probably more, you'll have more immunity the more children you have because you have more exposure. And I also think that if that ends up being able to be supported in multiple peer-reviewed studies, we may find as well that teachers may have that same natural protection because they're also exposed to all of those same colds and flus that kids get.
And that would be wonderful. And nobody wants to sacrifice teachers and say, you've got to go in there and teach kids and risk dying. I mean, nobody wants to do that. But I want us to recognize that when we're talking about very low transmission rates and kids that are not getting very sick, we are risking a huge number of kids over this. And the risks are high. They aren't just like, oh, poor you, you're bored. Mm-hmm. This is much bigger than poor you, you're bored, or poor you, you don't get to play on your t-ball team this year, or your soccer's canceled. There are kids going under emotionally. There are kids that their best meals are the two that they get at school when they get there for breakfast in the morning and they have lunch. Mm-hmm. There's kids that are not around their hungover parents in the morning or them starting to drink at 11 o'clock in the morning mm-hmm. from the excessive use of drugs and alcohol with the quarantining that's been happening. There's children in those homes.
Yes.
And so these kids are around stuff that they normally got a break from, and they're stressing out. One young boy that I saw was getting suicidal because he wasn't able to hang out with his friends. He was very bored and didn't do well with the computer learning, was missing sports, and had suffered some grief and loss in his life. He'd had a death of a grandparent that was very hard for him. And he was already grieving when COVID hit, and he just went downhill. What was really cool, and by the end of the show, I want to give you some of these coping skills, but he said something to his mom and dad, and they listened, and they called, and they said help. And he was able to do much better, partly because no one was telling him, buck up and just do it, and you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
So kids are struggling.
Well, and I think that I have a really big concern for the middle school and the high school students, you know, due to the fact that they do transmit the disease more readily than the younger groups do. They're having more cases. There's been more challenges. More of them are either 100% distance learning or they're doing hybrid of just 2 days a week. And I just think that those kids, they don't always they don't get a say in what's happening to them.
Yeah, they don't.
They have no
You're
control.
Right.
So we're asking a really huge sacrifice of them. They have no ability to change their circumstances. And I'm not sure how many parents are asking their children, how do you feel about this? Do you even want to be in school? Do you want to be full time? And I think that would be really helpful information to have.
Yes, and that's one of the coping skills we want to make sure we emphasize when we get to the last part of the show. You're absolutely right. Kids don't have any control over this. And some of the statistics I've heard here in Shasta County is that many of the seniors in the high schools are failing. The figure I heard was actually very large, and I wasn't able to substantiate it, so I'm not going to quote any figures. But that high school seniors are just blowing off the distance learning because, like one 16-year-old said to me, this is stupid. The busy work is ridiculous. What am I in third grade? What did you do on your summer vacation? I have to write some dumb essay about what's the bravest thing I ever did. And it's so dumb. And they're mad at the busy work, and they're mad at having to check in and then listen to some boring Zoom thing that they can't attend to and they don't want to attend to. And so they're blowing it off. And the seniors that I've talked to that are doing poorly, they say, they're taking away everything from us. Last spring, they didn't have prom. They didn't have graduations. They didn't get to do the things that they feel like they've earned by the time they get to be seniors. So we're having a hard time getting even the kids that would be old enough to have the ability to suck it up, saying, you can't get me to suck it up. I don't care. And so what's that doing to their high school final grades, to their college prospects? Many of them are very disappointed, having lost scholarships, lost opportunities to be picked up by sports teams in colleges and have those opportunities. The grief and the loss is incredible. It's actually extremely large for a lot of kids. So any other research that we're missing that you have talked about or you've read or you presented to the board of your school district on Thursday night, anything else that came up that you want to share with the listeners that you think is profound?
Well, mostly I want parents to feel reassured in knowing that schools are K through 12 in general is not found to be increasing transmission and certainly not driving transmission, and schools are not having outbreaks within them. That I also confirmed at the local level with our public health office. It's especially true for, K through five. So I just would kind of urge us to really consider that given that information, we need to be keeping that school open. I also read, this was in a study from the Journal of American Medicine. They referenced that one of the top authorities on the subject of distance learning acknowledged it just does not work that well for younger grades. So I really just would encourage us to consider that we need to keep elementary schools open. And I also think that we should really think hard about middle school and high school as well in terms of how do we balance keeping transmission at bay and the logistics of running the school with the other risks that we're really not talking about, which is the mental and academic suffering that these kids are going to be experiencing, that they're not going to get back. These are missed opportunities that we can't really, I don't know how we would be able to get back the things that they're going to lose.
Right. Yeah. How do you compound what they need to be doing next year with what they didn't get to do this year? When you can't go to school 24/7.
Yeah. I think with regard to closing schools, there's kind of two issues. One is we need to help parents understand that it's actually safe and teachers too, that schools aren't driving transmission. But the other piece is kind of the logistical one, which is how do you keep schools running when you do have cases? And that's something that my district was struggling with recently because you have students that are out. There's different protocols for when they're out. They do Google Classroom learning sometimes if they're out for a quarantine versus that's not as equitable as the full distance learning program when they're on that specifically, but they can't go into that unless they signed up for it at the beginning of the year. Then the teachers are out, and that gets hard for middle school because they're single subject teachers. And so it becomes this very big problem to solve logistically. And I guess I'm asking our school administrators, our society, our teachers, everyone, to kind of put our heads together and say, how do we solve this problem? What solutions can we find?
I agree. I think it's far more logistically complicated than people know. We need to go to break, and we're going to come back for one more section. Mandy's going to sum up some of the things she's learned, and I'm going to help give you some coping skills for your kids that are struggling in this COVID school environment. We'll be right back.
KCNR 96.5 FM and AM 1460 are honoring our veterans this holiday season with Operation Holiday Salute 2020. If you wish to thank our veterans for their service, you can join forces with KCNR for Operation Holiday Salute. The holidays can be a particularly difficult time for veterans, and this is your opportunity to lend a helping hand. A portion of the proceeds go to support homeless veterans. Call KCNR 530-605-4565 and become part of Operation Holiday Salute. Don't give up on your tomorrow. At Shasta College, we're offering more 8-week compressed classes, more online support, and more financial aid to help with life, not just textbooks and tuition. Whether it's online or in person, we'll continue to teach, encourage, and inspire, just like we have for over 70 years. Spring classes start January 19th. Enroll at shastacollege.edu. Start your tomorrow today.
Hi, I'm Arielle Winter. If you're anything like me, your pets are not only your best friends, they're part of your family. American Humane, which has been rescuing animals like Cleo here for more than 100 years, has life-saving tips that can make a big difference in a disaster. When disaster strikes, you want to protect your whole family, including your pets. To help keep your family safe and help our best friends in their worst times, find tips at AmericanHumane.org.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, Dr. Patty, and I'm here with my special guest, Amanda Nardo. She is a realtor with Vista Real Estate and a mom of two little ones. And so we are talking about COVID and the schools. So I really want you guys to know that when your children are in emotional distress, they don't always walk around crying. Okay? Children don't usually cry when they're depressed. They act out. This is when kids start lying and they start beating up on each other and they sometimes literally kick the dog and they break things and they don't cooperate and they refuse to go to bed and they refuse to get up and you can't get them in the shower and they won't pick up their clothes off the floor. They do things way more acting out than they normally do for normal kid stuff. And what's normal for your child. So depression does not always look like the boo-hoos, okay? It often doesn't in men either. So you need to know that. It's women that tend to be crying and going, I'm so depressed. And that's just because we express our emotions differently. But children don't always do the same thing. These children who are not going to school, are not on their sports teams, are not hanging out with their best buddies, are not getting invited to the birthday parties, who are not getting to think about their prom dress or their graduation or applying for colleges or whatever, meeting boys and girls and getting into relationships, they are suffering from grief and loss. They are losing a big part of their lives, and it's not made up by a little bit of distance learning on the computer. You can't get that from a Zoom meeting. So these kids are grieving, they're full of loss, and that is leading to emotional acting out and underlying depression. When you see your child acting out, when you feel that they might be depressed, it is very important that you sit them down and say, look, I'm noticing something going on with you. And that's very different than sitting them down and disciplining them because they were just acting out. You sit them down and you say, look, I've noticed some changes. You seem like something's going on. Talk to me. How are you feeling about this school closures? What do you miss about school? And I want to be clear with you. I can't fix it. I can't change it for you right now. But I can let you talk to me about it. Tell me how you're feeling. And then you don't fix it. Okay, repeat after me. I don't fix it. You just listen. And you do the thing I called listening noises. And here's how you do listening noises with a kid. Wow, well, how do you feel about that? And tell, give me an example of that. And tell me how else you feel. And, well, my friend so-and-so told me blah, blah, blah. Well, how does she feel about that? You're asking open-ended questions that do not have the answer attached to the question. Okay? This is not your teaching opportunity to teach your kids they should suck it up or be quiet or don't feel that way. This is not your opportunity to take the football and run down the field with it yourself and tell them about how you had to walk, you know, 9 miles to school backwards in the snow and poor this kid, suck it up. You're there on your wonderful little laptop. No, this is not about you. This is where you let them talk and let them have their grief and their loss and say, I hear you and I wish I could fix it for you, but I can't. You're not promising them, oh, I'm going to march down there to the school and make sure you can go. You are opening up the dialogue for sadness and grief and loss. And that is a huge coping skill. The other myth is if you ask a person who's suicidal, are you going to kill yourself or have you thought of killing yourself, that you will push them into suicide. That is not true. If your child comes up to you and gives a version of suicide, which it's not unusual for little tiny kids, 6, 7, 8, to talk about wanting to run out in the street in front of a car or to step off a roof or do things that they know will hurt them, and they'll say that out loud. So don't poo-poo it and don't ignore them. Sit them down and say, it sounds like you're feeling something important. Talk to me. What are you feeling? And you can even ask them, have you thought of killing yourself? Have you thought of hurting yourself some way? That isn't going to make them do it. It's going to open up the dialogue. And don't be afraid to reach out for help. One of my podcasts is called Suicidal Thoughts, The Call to Consciousness. Listen to that because you can use those tools to help your kids. So, Mandy, you've got some more important points that you wanted to make so that we can help these kids. So jump in here and tell me what you're thinking.
Well, one of the biggest questions that I get asked when I'm talking to people about my passion about opening schools, and to clarify, I'm referring to people to give them a choice. You know, I don't want to force anybody to send their child to school if distance learning is working really well for them, or they have other circumstances that make them feel uncomfortable with it. But I do feel it's important for families to have the choice where if they're not really set up to succeed at distance learning, those children should be allowed to be in school and have that opportunity. But one of the things that I hear the most is people say, well, what are we going to do when all the students are out on quarantine or the staff isn't there to run the school because they're quarantining. Logistically, it becomes extremely challenging. And that was something that came up at my school recently too. In the middle school, mostly, the teachers were out on quarantine and the students were bouncing back and forth. And you had a lot of students that were also choosing to stay out for COVID concerns just to prevent their risk of catching it, or maybe they had a sibling with it or something like that. And it just was causing a lot of trouble at the school. So I have some ideas I think we should maybe work toward to see if some of these might be able to help solve some of these issues.
Sure, throw them out. I think they're worth discussing and putting out there for people to talk about.
The first one is that I think what will help us ultimately is to have rapid testing available for schools, especially for the staff. Because when the staff can't be there to teach, it forces the entire cohort into distance learning, you know, temporarily until the teacher can be back. And we have a shortage of teachers and substitute teachers. So if we could get rapid testing available for the teachers and get them able to be back in the classroom safely, I think that to me seems like a very powerful way to solve the school problem.
I think that's excellent because right now somebody gets a COVID test and 4 or 5 or 6 days later they get the results back. And then there's places like airports that can test you and have results in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Why don't we have that in the schools?
Yeah, we can go to the Oakland airport and anybody could get tested rapid tested so that they can get cleared to go to Hawaii on leisure.
Uh-huh.
And we have all these major sports teams that have rapid testing available before the games for them and their families. But we don't have it for our schools yet, and that just seems really backwards to me. And I know logistically that's a huge, massive undertaking to get it out there, but I really believe it should be a national priority. So rapid testing would be key. The other concept I heard that I think might actually work is it's called distant teaching, which is that when the teacher, say you have a middle school or high school teacher who's trained in that subject, when they have to quarantine, this is assuming that they're not actually ill, and so they feel well enough to teach and they can, they would teach the class remotely from either their home or maybe another classroom in the school where nobody else is around them, and the students stay in person. And you would have to bring in another staff member mm-hmm. to kind of be with the children.
Like an aide or something.
Yeah, to mm-hmm. keep them on track or pass out assignments or whatnot. I think this would work logistically better for middle school or high school age mm-hmm. children. With elementary school, I think that the teachers are very skilled in their classroom management, and so that may not work for those grades. But at middle school, especially where it's a bigger problem, and you don't maybe need as much classroom management, I think distant teaching is something that we should look into. And then the other idea that I have is, one thing I mentioned before, was at our school, we don't have capacity for parents right now to go into distance learning if they can't keep doing back and forth. You know, you're in school for 3 days, then you're quarantined for 14, you come back, you get exposed again, now you're out. This back and forth is chaotic for families, and it's really difficult on them. And so, but part of the problem is that the distance learning program is of higher quality than the you're out on quarantine, follow the Google Classroom. But if we had the ability to live stream the teachers from the classroom so that the distance learning students and the kids that are in quarantine can all be part of that same discussion and get the same education, that's more equitable for everybody. And that might be a way to help bridge some of those gaps as well.
Yeah, they would feel more included with each other.
Yeah, but I'll tell you one thing that really impressed me about the school board for my children is that they basically said, okay, we have all these problems. We don't have the resources to fix them. And basically the school board said, we need to work towards solutions. We need to get creative. We need to continue to try. Because when we force the school to all go to distance learning, we're just trading one problem for another. Because we may be solving the problem for some families and students, but we're now creating new ones for the ones that are not set up to benefit from distance learning.
Yes.
And I love their approach of saying, let's get creative. What can we do? How do we solve this problem? We need ideas. Let's go to the staff. They didn't just look at it and say, we can't solve this problem. We need to close. They said, what can we do? We need to think harder.
I think that's awesome and so needed in these school systems. So we just have a minute here to wrap up. And I want to let the parents out there know that you are not alone if you're suffering. If you're feeling like even at times, I'm going to say this out loud, that you don't like your kids. It doesn't mean you're a bad mom or dad. It doesn't mean you don't love them. But sometimes way too much exposure to each other is not necessarily conducive to family closeness. So don't feel like you're a bad mom or a bad dad if you're struggling. Also, if you're feeling like you just can't keep up with your kids' curriculum and you're feeling like it makes you feel stupid, that's what the word I hear most, you're not alone either, because the stress of it is hard, and trying to do it from a different perspective, you're not a teacher, you've got a different kind of job, it's just not easy. So you're not alone out there. A lot of people are struggling, and I'm hoping that our communities, our schools, our school boards, and our parents come together to help these kids make it through this difficult time. So I want to thank Amanda Nardo with Vista Real Estate for coming on and for just having an incredibly unbiased view and the research that you've done. I think you did an incredibly awesome job, and I appreciate you being here today and taking up your Saturday morning.
Oh, well, thank you.
So this is Dr. Patricia Bay, and you've been listening to Therapy in a Nutshell, where I just want to help heal the world 1 hour at a time.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.